You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, good morning. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are walking with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. You're welcome to call 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me at dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. It's all good. It's a beautiful morning. It's always a beautiful morning if we just take a moment and just say it, because it is. Whether it's miserable outside or whether you're feeling miserable, it's still a beautiful morning because this is the only moment you have. I mean, it sounds like a soap opera. This is the days of our lives. Well, it is all you have. So sometimes it is so easy to just say it and repeat it and, I don't know, think about it. But let your heart, let your mind say one thing, but let it translate into your heart. It's what your mind says and what your heart says. And they don't have to be mutually exclusive. Sometimes they're two different things. But let's open up. And I want to talk about that a bit today, because I want to talk about you and your children in that. Were you a gifted child? Do you have a gifted child? Have you been given, or has your children been given, a diagnosis, ADHD, or autism, on the autism spectrum? Could that be real? Could it not be real? These are mind-boggling questions. This is a specific program today, so I want to make sure that you know from the outset, with anything I'm giving, presenting on a table, a little bit of a banquet of viewpoints, different viewpoints, my just drive to scour the research, scour what everybody's saying from from each side of a quote spectrum, because we're going to talk about spectrums today. Or as I like to tell you all the time, we've got this great big bell curve out there. That's why the bell curve happened. It didn't happen first. The bell curve describes life, oddly. The bell curve describes all of life, whether it be finances, soil samples, or whether your own personalities or lifespans. You've got a huge mass in the middle of a bell, the shape of a bell, huge mass. And that's most people. Then you have those little tapered ends at both sides. You have the, let's say, if we want to go on the lines of criminal activity, the big bell curve, most people aren't criminals. You taper out to each side of the curve, you have those who are only driven to do criminal activity. They really have no other desire or mindset to do anything else. Everything is a criminal activity, deception, take, harm, mutilate, whatever it is. And then you have the other side, the ones who've never done anything. They're small, these small percentages. They've never told a lie. They've never, told their parents they were going to go study when they were really sneaking out to see a boyfriend or a girlfriend. So we have these bell curves. And on the same spectrum as intelligence, as empathy, compassion, musical ability, artistic ability, everyone's got a little of something. However, when you look at the bell curve, let's say in intelligence, and you want to kind of slice it into the, not slice it, but put it into this bell curve, you have the mass of people that have more or less along some kind of a line intelligence. Inside the bell, there's room for the ones to go way to the top and maybe kind of stop a little bit on the sides. That's where most of us lay. Then you have the completely unintelligible geniuses are those who begin life just coming out that one red poppy in a field of white poppies. Where are the white poppies? That's the red poppy. That's the Mozart. That's the Beethoven. That's the Einstein. Somehow, all their other issues in life might be really big. They're socially inept. They really are disasters at keeping their own house. They're all kinds of stuff, but they may have something way at the end, and it may not be something you can see. We have our examples out there. So we can say, okay, maybe the guy next to me in my cubicle is not Einstein. At least I don't know he is, but maybe he's just a different kind of person. Maybe he has, maybe when you all of a sudden, have you ever had that experience? I have, where you get a snapshot of someone and you think you've got a not good picture, and then you hear them play a piano, or you see a drawing they've done, or you see a photograph, and you are blown away. I've been mistaken many times myself. A lot of people from early on, because of certain ways I presented myself or how I did in school, they would be shocked that I wrote poetry. Oh, they never even saw that, because the other part of me was out there. So what happens when that happens to you, and when that happens to your children? Well, we're getting in real. So let me just back up a little bit. I kind of got off the subject here. So I want to let you know that I am presenting to you ideas, concepts, just questions, things where you might want to scratch your head a little bit and revisit, reevaluate. You may totally come up with the same answers, or you may diverge a little bit, but it is no way. I in no way, especially when we talk about your kids, we talk about something as nebulous as the autistic spectrum or giftedness or non-giftedness or delays. These are just there. Can you really, what's a delay? What's a delay? I mean, even in traffic, I'm delayed in traffic. What does that mean? You went slow because you were listening to something, or you were stopped because there was a horrible car accident that scarred you for life, because the bridge blew up or there was an earthquake. What is delay? What does it mean to be delayed? What does it mean to be on a spectrum? Where are the edges of the spectrum? So I am no way, in any way, shape, or form, giving you an opinion as to whether you should continue on or not continue on in the path you're on. I'm not diagnosing, I'm not treating, and I'm not telling you that one way is bad and one way is good. I'm only presenting you as Dr. Michelle live, at this moment in time, I could change my thoughts tomorrow. This moment in time, these are my questions, my wonderings, my meanderings, my educated guesses, what do I have a problem? Why do I have a problem? Where does my experience help me have that problem? What's going on here? And I bring it to you to present to you a little buffet of questions, and you can choose to walk by them, or you can choose to wonder, but never in any way, shape, or form should you just stop what you're doing or abruptly stop any kind of treatment. But you can certainly open yourselves. And that's what I need to do, and I quest for, and I thirst for in my life, is to open and to remain open and it's hard because I close up really fast, just like flowers do. Some flowers do at night. Some flowers stay open, but many of them close, and some of them close really tightly. So what I want to do is give you a little bit of freedom to question, just to question. Sometimes we don't understand even how we get into the traps we get into. So today I want to talk a bit about giftedness. But if your child is gifted, and how sometimes you'd think, well, this person's so advanced. Of course, they're gifted. But do you realize, I didn't until just recently, that there are so many gifted children. Well, actually, I kind of did, actually. In fact, I had one. Who are being told that they are on or being diagnosed with mental illnesses. Now, that does not mean that if you have a child with disabilities or mental illness or is on a spectrum that they're not. They could easily be. And just because someone's gifted doesn't mean that they're not, they don't go through depression and anxiety and all that kind of thing as well. So this is a really interesting, just, we're going to unpack it. We're going to just see. It's like a, it's a collage. I don't really get it all myself. It's hard for me to describe it to you, but I will try to bring in a couple of personal experiences, but also I want to go through what about, here's a wonderful thing on a blog called Gifts for Learning, and it is 6 things you think you understand about gifted kids but don't. And I also want to talk to you about a thing called asynchronous development. Asynchronous development. And what that means is a gifted child can show the same problems that a person with learning disabilities, and they can have learning disabilities, and they can have social disabilities. So where along the lines do you call it, and what do you do about it? What happens is that the development may be big in one area and really delayed in another for a very gifted child. So I just want to implore you to grab your coffee, take a breath. If you're going, oh my gosh, she's insane, or oh my gosh, I have to, you know, change my whole lifestyle, take a breath. We're just going to talk about this like we're in some big discussion at a coffee house, because I need to know more. I know you need to know more. And it can be a very frustrating and lonely place if you know one thing in your gut or your heart, as we said in the beginning of the program, and another thing in your head. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. Grab your coffee. We'll be back in just a minute.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you're walking with me today on this road of life. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. We are on a journey, and wow, you know, there's never been a time, don't kid yourself. We just have modern clothes. There's never been a time when people, I mean, we are in Lent. Right? And we follow Jesus. We follow how he was adulated, how he kind of knew what was, well, he did know what was going to happen, but he was adulated. He was the king. He was followed. Even when people were ridiculed, they followed him. And even when he was ridiculed, all throughout his 3 years, people followed him, and he grew in what he did, for others, and also what they saw. And then at some point he was like adulated, rode in, and people were throwing palm fronds at him. And in a very short time, because someone just didn't want to deal with the conflict of having his popularity diminished, he wanted to keep his job, so to speak, Pontius Pilate. He went with the crowd, because he would be ostracized if he didn't, or killed. And he knew it was wrong, but he condemned Jesus to death, right? And there's a this is going to connect back to gifted children, believe it or not, and autism, and all the things we do in life. He was sentenced to death not because someone with a with thinking they're doing the right thing made a really big error in judging him in a court. It's because he went with what was popular. He gave up his truth, the truth. He didn't think the guy was guilty. He said, really, this guy hasn't done anything. They said, crucify him. And he kind of had to think a minute. Why do you think he washed his hands? Well, he didn't really wash his hands. But it's all about you being aware. It's easy when our little snapshot of time to say we are in a time like no other. Well, yeah, we are. You never walked the earth before, but we didn't. I mean, when Christ died, right, when he did his whole life and his passion, or it, name anyone, he's the big guy, but you name Socrates, name whoever. They were answering questions that were facing people of the day that are exactly the same now. How do we not get our minds corrupted? How do we not get our souls corrupted? How do we help our own children survive? How do we survive? How do we not get taken advantage of? How do we not be controlled by power? How do we not seek to harm others to get our own power and our own money? It's never ended. There's not a time where that didn't happen. So we're just basically in that. We just have different clothes and different questions. We still have the big things, the war, the famine, the inequity, inequality. But we also have all these little technology things people didn't have before, but they had things we didn't have to deal with. So I'm looking at this idea of autism, and here is the reason, because somebody in my family who is two and a half was diagnosed. First, the little groups thought maybe there might be something wrong with him. And then there was a little conference at like a 2-day a week preschool. And then there was the diagnosis. And not one person, and this is a very gifted child, but the gifted child, there's certain things they don't know. But there's a whole lot of things that nobody else thinks to ask because it's not in our situation or our culture at large that he does know. And that he does do, and he does think, but yet each one of those is twisted into a box. And it has his mother going just beside herself because she wants the best for her son. But what happens? The world is telling her, your child has a problem. And how do you say no? No, he does not. Because in this parameter, he does have a problem. If you call his name, he does not answer. If you ask him what anything is, he can tell you. But because that parameter isn't here yet, or the interest isn't here yet, and he can't tell you what's in his brain, he's got the box. So let me give you an example from my own life. I have an extremely accomplished adult son who is as high as you can go in one organization and runs another organization. He's always been intelligent, always been empathetic, always saw human behavior long before his time. I never knew what was always going on in his head. And if he were a little child now, he would totally be in the autistic spectrum. We probably all would be, but he totally would be. As a matter of fact, before kindergarten, when he, this was before computers, before the medical, before we are at the DSM-5, it was probably the DSM-3 or 4, 3 probably by that time. That's the psychiatric manual. They just started deciding that they thought it was a good idea to test kids all throughout the nation and place them for their own good in different classes and different levels. And they did this pre-kindergarten. And he flunked every parameter. This is my child who at 4.5 was already speaking Japanese. My child. This is someone who was able to undo locks at 2, who was able to finish songs before he was 5 months old. But he had very delayed verbal skills, as far as he had lots of verbal skills. He talked all the time, but he really didn't converse a lot till later in life, or not later, but older than most kids his age. Other things, he advanced extremely fast. He was on his feet at 7 months, which was odd, but he was. So I don't know. And people said, oh, he's going to have a problem because he didn't crawl. He never crawled. Oh, he's going to be, something's going to be wrong with his brain, or maybe something's wrong with his brain. That was back then. That was before we had our medical hands in everything. They didn't even have Prozac then. We've exploded in pharmaceuticals. We've exploded. They didn't allow on the television medical advertisers or drug advertisers. They didn't allow it. It was not allowed by the FCC or by the FDA or by the F whatever, any organization, whether it was the medical association, the airwaves, that was not allowed. And here he was. And they said, we need to put him in special ed for kindergarten. He also had recurrent ear infections, and no one took that in the mind. So when the person whispered to him to stack blocks, he couldn't do it. He stared at her blankly. He couldn't hear, you know? And when she walked out of the room, he saw some blocks. They went over and stacked them all. And then you sound like a weird parent, like, oh no, look what he really did. It was really heartbreaking and really hard. It was hard, but we were stupid. And that was great. That was the most awesome thing. I was stupid. I was a hippie mom. I was, you know, a teenage mom. And by that time, I was no longer a teenager. But I know what he is. So we're moving. I'm not going to do this. That's what I did. I don't know if I do that now, because I would be so, you know, intellectualizing it all, thinking it, looking it up on the internet, taking authorities' word for it, that I wouldn't have said no. I don't know what I would have done. I'm saying that I think it would have been more of a challenge. I'll give you another non-human example of how this works. I had cats my whole life, lots of cats. I had dogs too. And when my son was very little, we went garage sale around we just walked around the neighborhood. Somebody had a box of kittens. They used to have boxes of kittens. We took a kitten home. I had that cat. That cat, I don't even know what we fed it, what we didn't feed it. I don't know if we ever took it to a vet. There was another one we had too. It was in, out, whatever. That cat lived to in its 20s. It died, I don't know, 23, 24, went through different places, different houses, different this, different that. Then later, after I'd already gone through medical school and in a residency, we go to get a cat, right? And my husband and I went to get a cat at a animal shelter. They'd been thrown out of a window. And I was like totally neurotic. I wonder what I should feed it. I wonder if this is normal cat behavior. I wonder how I should do this. How should I make it the best cat that it can make? And I sat there for a minute and I thought, wait a minute. What in the world is going on? So I will finish that thought, and we're going to get into, though, the meat of gifted children and our lovely medical diagnoses out there. I am Dr. Michelle. Grab your coffee. See you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. And we're getting some look, an overview look. This might be the week of the child. We're getting an overview look of my thoughts and my concerns as a mother and as a member of a family and as a psychiatrist and as a physician and as a musician and as someone who's been a misfit in a lot of ways her whole life and who spawned misfits. So, was giving you the story of my son back when he was in kindergarten. And no, did he have an easy time? No. Yes and no. Yes and no. But going back to my cat story, the reason I told you about this cat is because this is what happens sometimes. We get so much information that it's not that we think we know anything. I didn't think I knew better, but I was getting so trained. I mean, you have to be regimentedly trained when you go into medical school. It's not a place to all of a sudden reinvent wheels. And so if you're a very creative person, you put some of the creation on hold, but you can utilize that as you think and you watch and you look. And some of the ways I went through school was like imagining like certain kinds of tissue that you'd see under a microscope. I would see it in a painting. In my own head, you know, so there's weird ways we all think, and I'm sure everyone thought something a little differently than I did. But it's not that you think that you want to you don't have a judgment about it. You just all of a sudden start falling into what you've been trained for. They started out with bells. I don't know if you all knew this. Bells in schools. I don't know if they still have bells, but they had bells or buzzers in schools because they wanted to get children regimented so that when they walked out and became factory workers or they became day shift workers and night shift workers, they were already conditioned to behaving a certain way when they heard the bell. And then their brains became conditioned to 8 hours of concentration or spurts of 3 hours, bell, 3 hours. You become conditioned. You just do. Just like we can become conditioned to having that bowl of ice cream after dinner. And it's not like we can't live without it. And it's not just because we like ice cream. It's we get conditioned to it. And then after 2 weeks of not having it, we think, well, I guess I don't really even want it now. So the whole thing about the cat was that in my really young teenage mom days, just went to garage sales, found a cat, brought the cat home. Cat did fine. Cat. I mean, really, it was unbelievable. And this cat lived really long. And it wasn't because she was that well taken care of. And so she went through kids and people babysitting her and taking her when I had to travel and then going here, going there, going everywhere. It was just traveling all over the country, getting fat, getting skinny. And then when I got this other cat so many years later after all this education, and I'm thinking, okay, I've got to look up everything. What's the right diet? What's the right this? When I just said, and I caught myself and I said, Michelle, would you just chill? Just chill. You did this before without even an issue. What is wrong with you? And so it was a lovely wake up call for me. So sometimes we need to do that. We get, you know, like when I hear about this family member, kind of a distant family member, and I don't want them to not go down the path because what if, right? I mean, the stakes are high. And yes, maybe this person needs a linguist. Maybe they need something else. I don't know. But I will tell you, A, you become an anthropologist in your own home first. What is it that they're saying? What is it that they're saying that your child can't do? I'll take the example of my own child. When he flunked everything and he was going to be put in special ed for kindergarten, he couldn't do draw the man test. He failed it because he didn't draw a man with a neck and he didn't draw a man with hair. And so I was my own anthropologist automatically without knowing it. I said, I brought in his dad, who had a big long beard, looked like ZZ Top, and bald head. That's the man he drew because that's the man in his life. So to him, he drew a perfect man. But to the tester, he didn't draw a perfect man. When he answered the question, bowls are made out of, and he said wood, well, that was a checkoff for him. But I said, that's what we eat with. Sorry, that's what I picked up at a garage sale. Wooden bowls. We eat out of wooden bowls. So, and when he couldn't stack the blocks, he had recurrent ear infections. And he had bad ones. And he couldn't hear at that point. So, for a short time until it got fixed. So, this is you're an anthropologist. But see, people can't assume those things. They don't look into your life. And even when I told them, they didn't care because he had to fit the boxes and he fit those boxes and that's all they cared about. But at that moment, you have to be your own anthropologist. And same with this family member. And my deal is sure you do. Now, if you have an issue where what is this? What is in this family? They had a lot of deaths in the family. So maybe there's some overprotectiveness. Maybe this child never has to respond to their name. But they are asked many things. Maybe, who knows? There's all kinds of things. What does each parent do in that household? Is one of them, looking at, the best way to play games with your child on the computer while the other one is answering text and emails. And then they're also conversing while their eyes are on their own devices and they're conversing with the child when their eyes are on these own devices. So, be your own anthropologist. So all this is a very long prelude into when we look at the week of the child. It's like, I want you to open up, take a breath and say, wait a minute, am I overthinking? Am I over regimented? Do I just accept because of my fear, because I'm afraid? So now let me tell you, first of all, about the concept of the misdiagnosis. There is an article. Well, let me tell you first. That there is a definition here. I said I would do this first. This was written by Carol Bainbridge, who is an expert in this field of gifted children and how gifted children aren't what you think they are. They're not smartest in everything. They don't just sail through life. So here's her article. She says it's about the definition of asynchronous development in children. And this says, asynchronous development refers to an uneven intellectual, physical, and emotional development. In average children, intellectual, physical, and emotional development progresses at about the same rate. Remember the bell curve. That is, the development is in sync. So as a child reaches the milestone intellectually, they reach it socially, they reach it verbally, they reach it physical-wise. It says, an average three-year-old has the intellectual and physical abilities as well as the emotional maturity of most other three-year-olds. However, in gifted children, the development of those areas is out of sync. They do not progress at the same rate. The higher a child's IQ, the more out of sync his or her development is likely to be. It should not be assumed, however, that each area of development must be out of sync with the others. For example, it is quite possible for a child to be advanced in all areas. So where she's going to go with this, and I may not be able to read you the entire article, but where she's going to go with this, and I want you to keep this in mind, that when you read this, it doesn't mean that if your child or you may have learning delays and learning disabilities and issues that may need some help or may want some help or may invite in help. It doesn't mean that all asynchronous development means that there's a gift there or vice versa. It doesn't mean if your child is gifted that they're going to necessarily be out of sync. So it says, so what are the implications of an asynchronous development? And it says it creates numerous problems for gifted children and their families, and especially their families. The problems are worse for the kids when their parents don't understand this developmental pattern. The major problem is that expectations for gifted children with asynchronous development are both unrealistic and unfair. So she goes on to talk about a five-year-old who can discuss the theories of dinosaur extinction or devise strategy to help the homeless is still a five-year-old. That means this child can become emotionally upset just as any other five-year-old. However, because the child is intellectually advanced, thinking and talking like a much older child, some adults may mistakenly expect him to have the emotional control of an older child. And likewise, when your child is 1, 2, 3, and 4, and they're not yet into the schooling and the discussion and the intellectual thought as much, they could be absorbing thinking in their own way without verbalizing. I'll always go back to that very creative playwright I knew in college who did not speak until he was six. 6 years old. That's very unusual. Not saying that this will, I mean, that's, he's going to be a one in a million. Didn't speak till 6 years of age. Didn't see any need for it, he said, as he looked back in his 20s and 30s. But that does, who knows why it really didn't happen. But he didn't speak. So we're going to get back to this. I want to finish up on this asynchronous development because I think this is super important. Whether or not you have a gift or a diagnosis, I think it's an important thing to know. All right. I am Dr. Michelle. See you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. I hope you're breathing and you're thinking and you're opening up and just like I have to do, because you know what? When I read some of these things now, I get sad. And I think back on this is going to make me cry. I think back on how misguided, even though that's why I've told you about the cat, and that's why I told you about just being young and stupid. And I wasn't stupid. I was a very smart person and I loved my child. So, but what I meant by that was it wasn't some great intellectual thing or book that I had read that caused me to go, you know what? I don't believe this. I know my child. And it now you could read everywhere on the internet. Oh, maybe I'm in denial. Maybe I'm just wanting to believe this. People look at you like, oh, you just want to believe that. You know your own child. And there are so many people that I know, and many of them are in the lower socioeconomic brackets, who have children who will have them on medication for years and years and years and years. And one day they say, you know, I just don't think this is what they need. And then over time, well, I don't want to go there. I'm sorry. I'm going to back up. All I know, because I want to finish this, is that this is not, again, I'm going to remind you, I'm not saying anything about this. If your child's on medication, you don't just abruptly pull them off, but it just causes you to wonder, have you been going against your gut? And it's really hard to know sometimes whether you just want something so badly that you're going to be blind to it. But you know what? So you hear all these stories of people, the woman from Shark Tank, Barbara, I can't remember, Cochran, who was dyslexic, and she was told she'd never be anything. And she was like flunking out of stuff. And here she is was like, you know, a multimillionaire, probably billionaire by now. She was a real estate mogul. She was a, you know, she's a star and co-creator of Shark Tank, you know? And so it's, you have to really open up here. So let's talk about this asynchronous development, because this is really important. And I guess where I was going in the beginning is, if I had known this stuff, I don't know, maybe I wouldn't have done anything differently. But man, there are things I didn't understand. And they say right here that a parent who doesn't understand it, it's harder on the family and the child, because you don't get it. You don't appreciate what might be going through their head, because they're just your little kid. So it says one of the major problems is that expectations for gifted kids with asynchronous development are both unrealistic and unfair. This is this Carol Bainbridge again. And it says that what she talks about is that the obvious challenge is that the physical development is not as advanced as the intellectual. So their brains may be absorbing things that you would not even have the slightest clue is going on. And yet, as that's developing hugely, they're clumsy, or they melt down and they throw tantrums. And sometimes, as it says, they throw tantrums and melt down sometimes because they're so far advanced in their brain, but maybe not their intellectual thinking, that things get frustrating to them. So let's see how she says it, because she's going to say it better than I can. She says, for an example, and this is one thing I never saw in my own child, and I think back and some of the bewildered looks on his faces when I didn't really demean his stuff. I didn't at all, but I think he thought of it that way. Because I saw let me just read this. This isn't the moment for me to go through my own things, but I'll just go talk to my spiritual advisor. All right. So this is, but I want you to know. So here it is. It says, for an example, an intellectually advanced child is able to evaluate the work that she or he does and compare it to the work of adults. They can visualize a completed picture in their mind, but their fine motor skills may be insufficiently developed to allow them to draw or paint. All right, so I had the reverse. I had my child as a little, I mean, he wasn't even more than five, because I remember what place we were in at the time. And he drew these elaborate note cards in this little spiral card book with these drawings that were like, looked like they came out of a textbook. And he was like five. And I was saying, and I just being me, not knowing, not understanding, I said, well, you don't need to really do all that, because he saw me doing it when I was going through school and he was comparing it. And then at some point I went through a lot of school without notes. So he, you know, so I said, you know, just sit and enjoy the class. But I'm talking to my five-year-old, you know? So he had kind of this bewildered look, like, oh, he did something wrong. Well, yeah, because he's five. You know, so you get used to you don't see how unusual this stuff really is. So I'm going to repeat that because it's so beautiful. They can visualize this. Now, again, reverse can happen. These children can evaluate. They're able to evaluate somewhere in their being who they are compared with an adult. And yet they're still their little tiny being. So they can visualize either a completed picture in their mind, but their fine motor skills may be insufficient to allow them to develop it or draw it or paint it. So it's very frustrating to them and they melt down and get frustrated, or they painstakingly draw or paint something, but they can't really tell you, but they're still little kids. So they can't really act it out or tell you or make it work for them. When a child's parent, it says they will get upset when they see their work does not measure up to the work of adults. They don't understand that the issue is that their physical development has not reached the level or verbal development that would allow them to do the kind of work they imagine. When a child's parent, then it says, When a child's parents understand asynchronous development, they can support their child and help the child understand that their muscles simply aren't ready to do what their minds want them to do. Eventually, the development evens out, almost always by sometime during the early teen years. But asynchronous development is uneven and can cause some real problem for gifted kids and their families. It's crucial, therefore, for parents to recognize that a gifted child's emotional and social development will not always match his or her intellectual development. Before responding to a child's emotional outburst or concluding that a child is socially or emotionally immature, stop a moment to remind yourself of the child's chronological age. The behavior may be totally in line with what one expects from a child of similar age, from other children of a similar age. Gifted children often feel like misfits, particularly when they are in classes with traditional learners. It's important not only to pay attention to a child's intellectual development, but his social and physical, and I will add emotional development as well. So in all of this, remember, we don't go by the written word. We go by the meaning and the intention behind the written word. For this writer, she has a gifted child herself, or a verbally gifted child, I think. But for her to devote her life to this and to bring out these ideas are so nurturing in this time on earth. Think of it, though, also, your child may be the reverse of what she's saying, but yet it's the same song, different verse. It's all about keep your mind focused on the concept of asynchronous development. It's not pie in the sky. Again, we're not telling you to do anything different than you're doing or saying that maybe your diagnoses are wrong. And again, a person can have a lot of different things. I used to tell my patients, you can have a broken foot, the flu, a burgeoning cancer, and a mental illness all at the same time. One does not preclude the other. And you can be the smartest person on earth and hold a great job. It doesn't preclude, one thing doesn't preclude another. All things can coexist like that. So it doesn't mean that maybe there aren't some issues, but what it does mean is that we can fall in these spectrums without a bat of an eye because they are so undefinable, so ubiquitous, and they hold up a standard that rarely has strong parameters, but that we kind of know, as she put it, the traditional learners. It's not saying they're better or worse. They're just more traditional learners in the system that we have in place. What about the other kinds of learners? How does your child learn? Be an anthropologist in your own home. What is the culture of your family? What is the focus of your family? Maybe you're all hikers. Maybe you're all physically developed before the other parts of you come to fruition, and your one child just doesn't have any interest in going hiking or camping and lays on their stomach all day drawing pictures of houses. So who knows where they're going? Honor that. Look at it as a beautiful ground that someone told you has tons of seeds in it. And all you need to do is water and sunshine and you'll see what grows up. So I hope that this has been a little bit nothing else, maybe a little frustrating, but you get to hear Dr. Michelle cry again, but maybe it will open up some avenues to you, just the beginnings, a little tiny curtain in another room for you to open up, breathe, and to know, to resynchronize your gut, your heart, your brain, your being, your maternal instinct, your compassion, so that you can utilize it for yourself and you can utilize it for your family. Well, I'm Dr. Michelle. We'll see you tomorrow on this Week of the Child.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.